Hello, this is Warren Hoyt. I'm glad to be with you once again. Today, we're going to look at the second chapter of Dr. Timothy Keller's book, Making Sense of God. The title of this chapter is, Isn't Religion Based on Faith and Secularism on Evidence? That's just a common belief. A lot of people think religion is blind faith. Secularism is based on facts and real evidence. In the chapter, Keller begins with some deconversion stories. These are stories of people who supposedly were raised in the church and then they finally woke up to the fact that the faith they'd been raised with didn't have any evidence to back it up. And so they ditched it. And many of them say that when they did that, they discovered that there was a world of people out there who were decent people and they didn't have any faith, but they weren't moral monsters. In fact, a lot of them were better people than a lot of Christians they'd known. Many people said that they were worried when they first left their faith. They thought that they would, you know, go off the deep end or something. But when they discovered that they didn't, it really opened their eyes. And basically, many of them said that they let reason and science kind of overcome their formal belief in the supernatural. And when they did, it helped them to actually finally see things clearly. And they realized that humanistic values of equality and freedom didn't depend on faith in God, and reason alone could establish truth. Now they're finally free. Well, lots of other people never come to faith at all for the same kinds of reasons. They don't see why they should believe in something that isn't provable or real when the secular worldview seems more reasonable. So the point of this chapter is to show that the secular worldview, contrary to what all secularists might think, also accepts a lot of propositions by faith. Now, that idea is totally shocking to many, and that's why this book is important. Keller is trying in this book to make the belief system or the beliefs of secularists more visible so they can understand that they are really believing in things by faith. Dr. Frank Turek does the same thing in his book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. That's why I taught on that book, and I really recommend it. So Keller wants to show what secularists believe. So in this chapter, he deals with two of their major belief systems. The first is what he calls exclusive rationality. That's the belief that science is the only real arbiter of what is real and factual. And we shouldn't believe anything unless we can prove it decisively with empirical observation. You know, you can weigh it, measure it, repeat it, and that sort of thing. Well, what Keller shows in the book, and what many have shown, is that this concept is self-defeating. It refutes itself because, think about it, even the statement, only what can be proven scientifically is true and real, cannot be proven scientifically. It cannot be proven by empirical observation. You just can't prove everything in a laboratory. Some things we all have to accept by faith. I'm accepting by faith that the chair I'm sitting in will hold me. You accept by faith that you can get in a car or an airplane and ride safely to your destination. You eat food at a restaurant because you accept by faith that you're not going to be poisoned. In fact, even the idea that there are other minds out there besides yours, you have to accept that by faith. You can't prove that I'm out here, that I have a mind, or that other people have a mind. You can't prove anything outside your own mind. You can't prove that some things are good or evil or beautiful. You just have to trust that they're so. And both Turek and Keller bring out the fact that even the so-called laws of physics, mathematics, and logic, even the scientific method itself, can't be proven by the scientific method. In fact, people have to presuppose that these things are true in order to even do science. Keller says all reasoning is based on prior faith commitments to which one did not reason. Interesting. See, we come to our reasoning through faith commitments and things that we didn't even reason in. Science deals with natural causes and effects. It can't detect or explain miracles. It can't explain beauty, love, purpose, or even the existence of the universe. The universe came suddenly out of nothing and it's not repeatable, so we can't even explain that. So To say science is the only arbiter of truth is not a scientific finding, it's a belief. And it's not based on the scientific method. Science has its place, but it can't solve every problem or discover all there is to know. That would be like using a metal detector and saying you can't find plastic on a beach. You searched with this metal detector and you never found any plastic, so therefore plastic doesn't exist. Well, metal detectors don't detect plastic. They're great, but they can't detect everything. They have their place. Same thing with science and reason. Our most rigorous rational thinking is actually shot through with various forms of faith. And so it's not just Christians who operate by faith. Everybody does. And people don't reject Christianity just because it isn't reasonable or doesn't make sense. They usually reject it for other reasons. There's a variety of reasons. But whenever we doubt one set of beliefs, it's always because we have more faith in a different set of them. That's one of the things that's one of the points he makes in this book and also his other book, The Reason for God. I think it's real important to take note of. We don't doubt one set of beliefs, or whenever we do doubt one set of beliefs, it's always because we're actually believing or having more faith in a different set of beliefs. So Keller is not saying we should abandon reason or science. He's just saying that a secular worldview is a belief system too, and all belief systems should be tested to see whether they're internally and externally consistent and line up with reality. Truth is, both secularists and Christians, we all look at the same world of experience, life, human nature, and so on, and we're all trying to make the best sense of it all. All of us, we use reason and faith, plus intuition and experience, social interaction, and so on, to try to come up with the best way to live life. Reason is good, but it doesn't and it cannot operate alone. So contemporary secularism is not the absence of faith. It is based on a whole set of beliefs, and a number of those beliefs are highly contested, contrary to what secularists may think. They're not as foolproof as some people might believe. Secular beliefs about rationality are not as trustworthy as we might think. And I just talked about that, and Keller talks about that in the first part of the chapter. But then in the second part of the chapter, he talks about another set of beliefs secularists have. They hold to a set of ethical beliefs about the nature of human life. And they think that these beliefs are progressive. And they want these progressive beliefs to be taught to everyone, and they hope that they'll be accepted by everyone so that we can work toward a better future for all humanity. Many people believe that religion, many secularists, believe that religion hinders the implementation of these values. And so they would really rather that we get rid of religion because they think it's a hindrance. What is very ironic, though, none of these ethical beliefs that these secularists are holding to, so absolutely none of them can be proved empirically. They actually don't follow logically from a materialistic worldview. And the most ironic of all, almost all of these values were actually borrowed from Christianity. So let's look at that for a minute. Let's break those down. Most secularists believe in a materialistic worldview. Everything just happened by chance, the Big Bang theory, theory of evolution, and so forth. So there's really no meaning to any of it, and we are definitely not special in any way. This is what Carl Sagan says. It's what this Tyson deGrasse, or whatever his name says. So many people say that there's no specialness to us. So we're just a big cosmic accident. And then after telling us that, they all end up by saying, so we should just celebrate life, love one another, and make the most of every moment. And they think that that is a wonderful conclusion to their argument. They don't realize it's really kind of incoherent. I mean, if everything is meaningless, then what difference does it make what any of us do? Shouldn't we just grab for all the gusto we can get? I mean, if we evolve from lower forms through survival of the fittest, the weak eating, the strong eating the weak and so forth, why should we suddenly now become altruistic and want to love everybody? I don't think that naturally follows, but many secularists don't see the illogic of it. The truth is that Christianity is what gave us the idea that we were valuable and we should love one another, and that we're important as individuals. Christianity teaches the worth of every individual. And this is the most ironic thing of all. The moral values of Western, liberal, secular culture, including the value of individuality, equality, rights, love, concern for the poor, and desire to improve the conditions of all living people, all of this came originally from Christ and from Scripture. It's historically indisputable. People may be shocked at it, but it is true and it's provable. Well, when some people find out about it, they say, well, okay, so it came from Christianity. So what? Can't we just take the good out of that old-time religious system and leave the God part out? And the answer is no. And Keller talks about Nietzsche, the German philosopher, and how back in the 19th century, he saw that a lot of moderns were trying to do this. They wanted to ditch religious belief in the Christian or Jewish God, yet still believe in the rights of every person and the requirement to care for the poor, the weak, the disadvantaged, and so on. And he said, hey, wait a minute, this is hypocritical. This is inconsistent. You want to get rid of the religious belief, but you want to hold on to this value system that came from it. You should ditch that. And of course, you know, Nietzsche, he said man should come up with his own values. We didn't need God. God was dead. And he said that Christianity actually promoted weakness in the human race, and we should just get rid of it. And he had the idea of the Superman, you know, we're going to boldly go into the future and be tough and develop a noble warrior culture and so forth. And of course, he didn't see the hypocrisy of what he was doing, because he was talking about what was good and noble. Well, based on what? It's the same dilemma here. Based on what? What you think is noble and good? Well, everybody doesn't agree on that. And of course, if you know history, Nietzsche's ideas ended up inspiring a lot of people like Hitler and Stalin. I wouldn't say that's the greatest fruit that could be produced. And also, the man himself ended up depressed and in an asylum. I don't think we could say Nietzsche's thinking worked out so well. And yet, modern secularists, they don't agree with Nietzsche, perhaps, but they still maintain the same idea that we can come up with good values by our own human reason and just work for the good of the world because it's right. The problem is here, again, who's to say what's best or right? Have you noticed we don't agree on all that? I mean, let me tell you, ISIS has way different values about what's right and good for the world than we do. Even in our own country, the Republicans and the Democrats, we have totally different values. And who's to say which ones are right? Secularists have a value system, and they have a viewpoint, and they accept their values by faith, and yet they scoff at the idea of faith. They don't even realize that they're accepting them by faith. So that's kind of Keller's point. And then at the end of the chapter, he comes back around to the deconversion stories, and these folks who left their faith and, you know, were deconverted and so on. And he shows that if you look into it a bit more, you'll discover they're not such clear-cut examples of faith versus fact as many of them claim. In fact, a lot of the falling away from faith is caused not by reason, not because Christianity didn't have any reasonable answers, but rather by a lot of other things, one of which is wrong understanding of what Christian faith even teaches. For example, Keller says, you know, if you accepted sort of the notion that if you're a Christian, everything's going to work out for you and nothing really bad could ever happen to you, well, you're likely to be disappointed and you're going to give up your faith because it doesn't work out that way. And what Keller brings out and what everybody should understand is, of course it doesn't work out, because it's not what the Christian faith teaches. It's not what the Bible teaches. It's not what 2,000 years of church history teach. But people think that it is, and so if it doesn't work out, they ditch their faith. The other idea, you know, a lot of times people think, well, Christians are saying that every secularist would be a moral monster, you know, a total reprobate and so forth, and be evil and have no good values. And so when they step out away from faith and discover that there's a lot of pretty well-balanced and happy people out there that aren't believers, then they ditch their faith because they think, oh, well, this isn't what I thought would be the case. Well, again, that's because you accepted a wrong idea. Christianity doesn't say Christians are wonderful people and they're all good and they've got it all together and all the other people are wicked monsters of iniquity. It's just not true. So a whole lot of falling away or never coming to faith in the first place isn't about facts versus faith, but it's about wrong understanding, as we just talked about, or it's about other things like, you know, you're really not searching for truth and what's the most rational, reasonable, fact-based belief system. You're really pursuing your own pleasure, your own happiness, and so on. A lot of sexuality comes in here, and a former believer experiments with sex and decides he likes it, he or she likes it, and so they reject the Christian ethic and so on. Or a non-believer doesn't want to be restricted sexually, so they reject the Christian ethic. That's not a pursuit of truth. It's not facts versus faith. It's a pursuit of happiness, let's face it. And so the Bible speaks about that, the pleasures of sin. If sin wasn't pleasurable, no one would do it. But we need to at least be honest and not say we're rejecting faith because it doesn't make sense or it's not reasonable. No, we're rejecting it for something else. So the point of the chapter is that the choice between faith and secularism is not really just a choice between fact and faith. Western secularity is not the absence of faith. It is a new set of beliefs about the universe. And these beliefs have their own contradictions and problems, just as other religious faiths do. We've seen two of the major problems so far: modern secularism's humanistic values that are inconsistent with a materialistic worldview, and also the fact that modern secularism is often based on this simplistic, unworkable view of reason. The truth is, neither the theist nor the secularist can prove, quote unquote, their view. So we need to accept that and move on. We need to come at this in a different way and look at the competing belief systems and examine them objectively to see which actually fit reality best and provide the best and most workable philosophy for life. So that's what this book is about. Keller, in the rest of the book, he's going to start examining secular beliefs in the cold light of objectivity, and he's going to look at where they're strong and where they're weak, and then compare them with the Christian worldview. I hope you either get the book and read it yourself, or that you'll join me next time. Until then, may the Lord richly bless you, is my prayer.